Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Am I my brother's keeper? Are you? As I was listening to Donald Trump today and thinking about Trump Care and all the premiums that are going to increase and all the people that are going to lose their health care and how all the deficit's going to grow, I began to think about the motivations of the Republican Party, of conservatives, of Donald Trump. He's actually easier to understand in some ways. It's just narcissistic. Whoever compliments him last gets whatever they want. But thinking about Republicans and conservative philosophy and why they would support such a, frankly, cruel measure. And I got back to the old question from the Bible. Am I my brother's keeper? Remember who says the question. It's really an extremely cynical question. The person who asks the question in the Bible is Cain. Cain is the first son of Adam and Eve, the first people. Cain has just murdered his brother Abel in cold blood. And he's walking around. I guess he's washed the blood off his hands. And God asks Cain, "Where's your brother?" To which Cain responds, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Think about the cynicism behind what Cain believes to be a rhetorical question. First of all, Cain knows God exists. He talks to God. That's one of the advantages of being first son, I suppose. And he knows God doesn't like murder, right? He's not going to tell God he just murdered his brother. But he's also denying God's power. Right? I mean, I guess he doesn't think God sees all, or he would know that God just saw him kill his brother. Am I my brother's keeper? Well, Cain's implication is no. No, I don't have to worry about my brother's welfare. My brother's on his own. Heck, I just killed my brother. I don't have to look out for him. Cain mistakes the difference between having to care for someone or not, which is really what "Am I my brother's keeper?" asks, and actively murdering his brother, which hopefully all of us can see is not a good thing to do. "Am I my brother's keeper?" Cain asks. "Look away, God. Don't worry about me. I'm doing just fine. I'm alive. Yeah, my brother's dead, and yeah, I killed him, but that's not my responsibility. We don't have to look out for one another. I am on my own. And if I killed my brother, well, I guess he just should have loaded up his AK-47, God, and gotten to me first." I was thinking about a recent poll I saw on Meet the Press yesterday. And the poll showed that Democrats live, and this is not going to surprise anyone, Democrats like to live in places where there are lots of people around. We like to live in cities. We like to live where we can walk to the supermarket or to our job, even if possible, or to our local school. We like neighborhoods. We tend to know our neighbors. We don't even mind if we have to live in smaller spaces because we like to be around communities. Different people excite us. We get a joy in learning about other cultures. We might like to try different restaurants. We live in New York City. We live in an impossibly crowded place. And most New Yorkers love it. Republicans, again, this won't surprise you. They're not too fond of their fellow human beings. Well, they can be there. They can exist. I'm not saying all Republicans want to go on a mass murdering rampage or anything, but they want to live apart. They like to live in rural areas. They don't want to be too close to people. They don't mind driving to places. They want their peace and quiet. They don't want their neighbors around. They don't really like people that much. They value solitude. Or individualism, they might say. We don't need to be pejorative about it. They value their alone time. And I get that. I mean, I both love to be with people and value my alone time. I think most human beings are that way. We like to spend time with others. We enjoy the companionship and the fun of our fellow human beings. We like to learn from others. And at the same time, there are times when we just want to be left alone. So I get that. I understand that implicit tension between those two principles. And indeed, Democrats are the party of it takes a village. We're the party of our community. We're the party of looking out for one another. We're the party of lifting others up, of equal opportunity, of making sure that everyone gets a chance. We see others suffering on the other side of the globe, and we feel bad. Republicans, and I'm going to try to put this as non-pejoratively as I can, are the party of individualism, the party of lift yourself up by your bootstraps. You don't need the government. You don't need any help, and you don't want to help anyone else. Everyone, you're on your own. And if you're born rich, good for you. That's great. You get to keep all your money. If you're born poor, well, go be rich, and then you get to keep all your money. If you're born strong, that's fantastic. You can lift things. If you're born healthy, that's wonderful. You don't have to worry about dying. And if you're born weak or infirm, well, that's just not my fault. Am I my brother's keeper? Republicans say, no, I'm not my brother's keeper. I can't help it that you were born with some disease. That's not my fault. I didn't cause you to be born with some birth defect. Figure it out for yourself. I got my own problems. I'm building a new shed over here, don't you see? And if I have problems, well, I'm tough. I'll take care of my family. If I can't take care of my family, well, we'll just have to die. We aren't going to depend on others. We are self-reliant. It's a bit of a caricature, but it's the heart of the difference between what makes a liberal and what makes a conservative, right? Am I my brother's keeper? Republicans say, no way, Jose. They don't even like Jose. It's just not there. It's not my problem. It's not my problem. For Democrats, we are the world. It absolutely is our problem. And I need to be clear, because I think there are obviously some Republicans who care about people, and there's some Democrats who don't care about people. I don't mean to put us all in one category, but these are the basic philosophies. And I actually think there's an old Arab proverb that sort of explains everybody. I think we all have limitations on how we approach this. But I'm paraphrasing here, and I don't read Arabic, but my understanding of this old saying in the Middle East is, I hate my brother. My brother really gets on my nerves. But if my cousin comes and attacks my brother, I will be defending my brother. My cousin's a jerk. But if someone in my town comes and attacks my cousin, my family, my flesh and blood, my cousin, you can bet I'll be defending my cousin. There are just a lot of people in my town are a bunch of bastards. But hey, if someone in that other town comes and attacks the people in my town, oh, you can bet I'm defending my town. They may be bastards, but they're my bastards. Screw that other town. I don't like them. But if someone from another country comes and attacks the people in that other town, you can bet I'll defend them. These are my countrymen. I'm a patriot. I believe in my country. I believe in my people, my tribe. Who are these other people, that other tribe, that other race, that other ethnicity, speaking that crazy language with that stupid religion that I don't share? How dare they attack mine? My countrymen may be jerks, but they're my countrymen. And I get that too. And frankly, even for liberals, it makes some sense, right? I mean, I'm most focused on my own family. And outside my family, I'm focused on my friends, and outside my friends, on my city, and outside my city, on my state, and then my country. And yeah, there's a terrible terrorist attack in Somalia, and it's somewhere on the Washington Post, and I haven't read about it yet. So maybe I'm guilty of the same proverb. The point is, out for other people is kind of a basic philosophical question. And it's one that goes to the heart of who we are. And while I say that I think Democrats look out for others more than Republicans do, and I don't think actually many Republicans would dispute that. Maybe they would. Heck, if you dispute it, give me a call. Let me know that you disagree. But I do think there is a healthy balance between individual and community, and I think you can go too far in helping others. If you help others so much that you deny yourself, it can go too far, right? I mean, if you give up all your food so that someone else doesn't go hungry, that's certainly a very laudable thing to do and will praise you. But if you're dying of hunger yourself, well, you haven't really solved the problem. You know, they tell you in the airplane when the oxygen mask drops down, put it over yourself first, and then please help your neighbor. You don't want to be dying of asphyxiation because you can't get that mask over a difficult human being next to you. So I understand. This is a basic philosophical question. I do believe you have to protect yourself first. I mean, you got to live if you could, to help others. But I also think that Democrats are more thinking of sacrifice, more thinking of helping their fellow human being. After all, we live among each other. We live cheek and jowl by our neighbor. Our neighbor, we see them every day. We walk out of our house and there's our neighbor. That's the communities in which we live. We live in cities. We live in suburbs. So we have to think about our neighbor. They're right there by our side. If we don't love our neighbor as ourselves, our neighbor might not tell us when our package is delivered to their door by mistake. Republicans have fewer neighbors. So all of this to me wraps into healthcare. Because there is absolutely a cynical political side to it, and we'll get to that. Of, you know, first the Republicans named the Affordable Care Act Obamacare, and then they try to dismantle it because it's named after Obama, which of course they did. But for those who are actually serious, those like my good friend Mike Lane, who is a Republican, and I bring on this show from time to time, and I'm sure I'll bring back, he really helps me understand their mindset, because Mike is not a Trumpist, although I'm sure he voted for Trump. His goal is not disorder and chaos and even the racism and homophobia and misogyny and Muslim hatred and Latino hatred and all that Donald Trump's about. No, Mike Lane is an establishment Republican. What he does believe in is what Ayn Rand might call the virtue of selfishness. You know Ayn Rand, of course, the philosopher in the 1940s who wrote the book that Paul Ryan makes all of his staff read. It's all about self-reliance and individualism and the virtue, as she puts it, of capital S selfishness. She loves people who are selfish. She believes if everyone looks out only for themselves, the entire world will prosper. And I'll be the first to tell someone to look out after themselves. There's nothing wrong with looking out after yourselves. But Democrats believe we have to look out for others, too. And we understand that not only does it take a village to raise a child, but if you help the village succeed, you actually help your own child succeed. There's all kinds of different religious ways to say this. You can talk about karma. You can talk about paying it forward. You do a good deed to someone, and she does it to someone else, and they do it to someone else, and lo and behold, it helps you again. After all, we're born helpless, and we die helpless. But if in between we help others, maybe someone will be there for us when we're born or we die. It's a basic conflict of philosophies, and nowhere is it more clear than in healthcare, and I'm going to get to that after the break. If you want to join in, please do, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Love to hear your views. Be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Who says nerd? nerds can't be fun. It's Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about Trump care, or maybe we should call it Trump don't care or Republicare, but in a larger philosophical context of what it means to be a liberal or a conservative. I'm really trying to understand the Republican, the conservative mindset. If you're a conservative and you disagree with me, or if you agree with me, either way, I encourage you to call in, liberals or conservatives. We do have conservative listeners, by the way. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to Old Faithful, Michael, line 3 in the Bronx. How are you, Michael?
What's up, Mark? You know something? I had to call in to really put a challenge and open up a can of political whoop butt on Tweety Dum and Tweety Dum Dum, that is Trump and Pence. These two imbeciles who dare to call themselves Christians, but doing the utmost unchristian things, and befits your topic, and which all in all, they're hurting fellow Americans.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that in the second half hour. It is weird to me that they have so much evangelical support, because I thought Jesus talked about caring for one another, not about hating one another. And yet it just seems to me that not liberal Christians, but evangelical Christians, the ones that support Trump and Pence, are all about hating the other and not about helping your neighbor.
The whole thing is that you got the real Christians, which in my view is on those are on our side, and I have the utmost authority right now to discuss this, since I am Christian, I am Catholic, I follow the Gospels. I may have a potty mouth sometimes because I get so doggone mad at the injustice and the lies and the hypocrisies spewed out by these same right-wingers, and I get so upset when they hijack my religion, or should I say de-religion, and turn it into something that it's not. And they want to cloak themselves with the flag. They want to cloak themselves with the Bible and Scripture, twist it out of context just to justify the abuse towards other people who may not be as rich as they are, but they know damn well they wouldn't tolerate it if it was done to them or their.
I'll tell you, Michael, that's one of the reasons why I quote from the Bible. I think there's a lot of meaning in the Bible. I don't think liberals should run from it. I have no problem with people who are atheist or agnostic. You have the right to believe what you want to believe. It's the First Amendment to the Constitution. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in the Bible, even if you don't believe in God. And that's one of the reasons why I brought up that famous passage, "Am I my brother's keeper?" It seems to me that the Bible teaches us to look out for one another. Certainly Jesus was all about looking out, particularly for the poor, for the meek, for even a prostitute, a leper. I mean, he was hanging out with what he might have called the least among us. And he said, "The meek shall inherit the earth." And so it's striking to me that Republicans who are, you know, "You must say Merry Christmas or I'm insulted," aren't really focusing on Christ much at all, are they? Thanks for calling, Mike. 888-488-MARK if you want to call in. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
About Trump care and Republicare. I'm going to get to the health care debate, I promise, later on. But in general, about liberal and conservative philosophies, how we look at the world. Because I think you have to know where people are coming from to understand where they're going to understand what conclusions they come to. And so I ask in my brother's keeper, because I think conservatives and liberals answer that same question very differently. We both are concerned about our brothers. But we're concerned about ourselves. But I would argue Democrats overall are more concerned about their neighbors a little bit more than Republicans are. All right, Michael from the Bronx had one more comment to make briefly. Go ahead, Michael, make your comment.
Yes, and you know something more. With the way Trump, Pence, and these right-wing evangelicals are going about this, this is why we have separation of church and state. I mean, me being Christian and Catholic, I know there are other religions. I get it, and I respect them and do so with love. And they go about practicing the same things about peace to one another and love. They may be Jewish, they may be Muslim. The thing is learning to live with one another. So the point here is right-wing evangelicals, that if you call yourselves Christian, but then engage in the hate and discrimination of any kind, that you cannot call yourselves really a Christian because you're not following the teachings of Christ and you're denying people health care and other equitable things. And
right.
If you dare call yourselves Christian, then read my lips. Now hear this. You are a God-forsaken liar.
Hallelujah. Okay, Michael, your point is well and clear. Thank you for staying on the line. Let me go to, I think, a new caller. I'm not sure. Mark, line 5 in San Francisco. How are you, Mark?
I'm well, Mark. You know, I'm a Catholic, and I believe in the teaching of Jesus Christ, and I certainly wouldn't want to be a Republican because what they believe in is evil, it's cruel, and it doesn't come close to what I believe in as a Catholic. But I wanted to talk about something important, I think. I think we need to really label the Republican Party, the Koch brothers, and Donald Trump as economic terrorists. And I mean their economic policies are going to kill Americans. They're going to rob Americans, and it's just an evil, evil tax code that they want to address here on us, and they want to take our health care away. And I think we really need to call them out for what they are. They're going to kill Americans. So why don't we call them terrorists?
Well, I think they are going to kill Americans, and I think that's absolutely true in the health care proposal. The question I have, and I don't have an answer for it, so it's an open question, is whether calling them those names helps change minds or not, helps change their minds. I almost wonder whether holding up a mirror and saying you don't reflect the own values that you claim to profess, you know, you claim to be Christians, answer this question from Genesis. You know, I can call them names. I can agree with the names. I have no doubt that Trump care, Republic care will kill probably at least 10,000 Americans a year. And frankly, that's a conservative estimate. It's likely to be a lot more. And I can say that, but the name calling, I just wonder whether it's productive or not. Who does it help? Does it change minds, do you think, Mark? That's my question.
You know,
I'm not saying it's not justified, but my question is, as a matter of tactics, does that change a Trumpist view, or does that just get them saying, oh, you know, this guy, you know, he's a crazy liberal and I don't have to listen to him?
Well, no, I agree. It's extreme, but we're dealing with an extreme party.
Well,
we're dealing with extreme, basically proposals on the American people that are going to harm them.
Yep.
You know, there is a way, like you say, there's a cordial way to attack them, and maybe they'll listen. But I think you really just need to call them out. They have no problem in calling liberals names, but I really think that tag should be laid on them.
Yeah, I guess what I would rather do.
Terrorists ever did in this country.
It's a slight distinction. I guess what I would rather do is say the facts, which is that more than 10,000 Americans will die if Trump care and Republic care get their way. That's a fact. It's something I can prove. It's a data point. You know, basically 1% of people without insurance die from lack of insurance every year, and I can show some study that proves it. And I can actually make that fact rather than just saying you're a terrorist, which I think is an opinion and closes down people's minds. I'd rather just give them the facts. But your point is well taken, and I appreciate your call, Mark, and please call in again sometime. Let me go to Julian. Julian is in Alexandria, line 4. Hey, Julian, how are you?
Hi, Mark. Doing well. Mark, I wonder if you can help me with this. I spend a lot of time trying to understand the Republican point of view and from their mindset from the perspective of brain science and linguistics. And it strikes me that there's always a fundamental contradiction in what they say. And the first thing many of them tell me is that they've accepted Jesus Christ as their personal savior,
mm-hmm.
And then they want to try and force their views on me and my lifestyle. So I don't know why they just don't want to keep it personal. The second thing is that they all profess this great love for you as long as you were a fetus, but once you're on your own, you're on your, well, once you're born, you're on your own, sucker.
Right. Well,
so
let me deal with both of those. Sure.
Mindset.
Let me try and see if I can explain. And one of the things that I think it is important to do is to try to understand people who disagree with us. I think Christianity itself is a bit of a contradiction, right? I mean, this is this personal religion of this Jewish prophet who comes basically to reform the Jewish faith, which has gone awry, right? You've got people selling sacrifices and money changing in the temple. Kind of reminds me of what the Protestants complained about the Catholics 1,500 years later, selling pardons. And he's trying to bring it back to sort of a more pure Judaism. And I can see why people be very attracted to that. As I said, a personal goal, and I understand why people have a personal relationship with the deity. The question is, when you impose it on others, what are you trying to do? I think some Christians would tell you that they do it out of love, that they want to force you to recognize this, the love that they have enjoyed, that they respect, that they connect with. And what I think they don't understand, and many Christians do understand this, but classically, Christianity has been split in two directions, right? I mean, classically, Christians came in the Middle Ages and killed people that didn't accept Jesus. So, you know, part of religion, I think, has to be that people can accept it for themselves, that the best way to show someone your particular theology is to persuade them that you're right rather than force them to accept that you're right. And that's what I try to tell people who try that force. And the question about the fetus, you know, that's a tough one. I think, again, partly that is due to religious beliefs. I think that, you know, the Catholic Church particularly has been strongly anti-abortion. There are people who personify the fetus, who, you know, think that it can feel pain, even though scientists, by the way, have said that, no, the nervous system isn't really developed till at least the 30th week to even feel pain. But they think, well, this can be a person someday. And so, therefore, they personalize it. And I get that. It makes sense. You know, you can go back as far as you want. There's some who could personalize the egg and the sperm. But given that so many of eggs and sperm are not used, you know, it's a weird argument to make. I think, though, that once the child is born, that's when the republicanism comes in. And I don't think it's Christian. And in fact, the Catholic Church is very good about taking care of poor people. They're at least consistent. They care about the fetus and they care about the child. But the Republicans, I think, revert to this sort of individualism. I think they don't really – they defend the fetus not so much to defend the fetus, but because they don't like people having sex. You know, if you look at it, Trump is not just trying – they're not just, you know, trying to stop abortions. They're trying to stop birth control. So why would you try – if you really, really cared about fetuses, you would want to have lots of birth control because you wouldn't want to destroy a conceived egg. But the fact they're trying to stop birth control tells me that their real goal is they just don't want people having sex or sex outside of marriage. And it's this need to control others that's very, very important to them. It's really not about the fetus at all. And you can see that when they don't care about the child. When they see that children's health care, for example, the state children's health insurance program is just being decimated. If they cared about the fetus, they would care about the child. Instead, I think it's much more about control. And if you look at ancient religious precepts, a lot of them are about controlling women, controlling women's sexuality, controlling women and who they can be with. And you still find that. You find this in conservative Islam and Judaism as well, this idea of, you know, cover the women and modesty. And it's really the idea of not seeing women so much as people, individuals, with their own choices so much as, well, a commodity, right? You can trade so many sheep for a wife. So I don't know if that explains it, but I'm trying to. I'm trying to understand Julian. Does that make some sense? Do we still have Julian? Maybe Julian hung up. All right, I'll tell you what. We'll take another break. I'm going to come back and talk more about specifically the healthcare proposals that are before Trump and before Congress and why I think they reflect Republican or Democratic values. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. So what does all this philosophy have to do with Trump care, Obamacare, health care in America? First of all, I think we have to separate Trumpist motivations from ordinary conservative motivations. I haven't been describing Trumpism. I've been describing ordinary conservatism. I don't think Donald Trump is an ordinary conservative, and I say this not to praise Trump or conservatives. Donald Trump is a narcissist. He will say or do whatever he thinks will cause him to get the most praise, which is why, in some ways, we Democrats still have power to manipulate him. In fact, Donald Trump said something good today. Now, you know, I don't know if hellfire and brimstone is going to rain down on me for saying that. He did. He said something good today. He correctly pointed out that our drug costs are way too high in America, our pharmaceutical drug costs. Now, whoever framed it to him, brilliant. Got to give that person credit. He said, it's not fair. Other countries are cheating us. See, you frame it in a nationalistic, xenophobic way, a way that shows that you hate foreigners, and Donald Trump loves it. But it is, of course, true that drugs in Canada or Europe or virtually everywhere on the planet are a quarter or a third the cost of ours. And the reason is very simple. In fact, when I entered Congress working for Barney Frank as his legislative counsel, when I first walked into the halls of the House of Representatives, the very first bill that I remember them debating was a bill to determine whether or not the government, whether or not Medicare and Medicaid could negotiate to get cheaper pharmaceutical drug prices. And it was a party line vote. All the Democrats said, you know what? We care more about our constituents than we do about the international drug corporations. And we want the government to negotiate to get better prices the way they do in Canada and England and France and Japan and New Zealand and 100 other places on the planet. And Republicans said no. What they said was, we're not going to have the government interfere in the free market. But what they meant was, screw our constituents. They don't give us donations. Big Trump companies give us lots of donations. They didn't say that out loud. But otherwise, why would they support not negotiating drug prices? I mean, I negotiate if I buy a car. If I'm at the market, you know, I mean, we negotiate prices all the time. If I'm having a plumber come to my house, I'll check six different websites and find out who's the best and inexpensive, right? Of course, I want union plumbers because union plumbers are better, but I'll get the cheaper union plumber. Look, why wouldn't the government negotiate better prices? And so Donald Trump's right about that, but he's doing it because someone framed it in that xenophobic, nationalistic way. Trump care for Trump is just about undoing everything Obama did. That's for Trump. But for Republicans, it goes back to this basic philosophy that I've been talking about this entire hour. When I had my friend, my guest, my Republican friend, Mike Lane, come on this show, our basic difference was not about the details of Obamacare. It was about whether or not health care is a right or not. Liberals believe that health care is a right. We believe in the richest country on earth. People have a right to be treated for treatable diseases. We don't think that people who aren't our family, we don't think our fellow Americans should die because they're too poor to get treatment. And that's a basic philosophical belief that, yeah, we are our brother's keeper. And Republicans have the exact opposite philosophical belief. They think that, well, you know, I feel really bad that you're ill, and maybe my church will help out. But philosophically, I don't think I have any obligation to you. You're not me. I'm not my brother's keeper. Maybe I have an obligation to my family. Maybe less so to my town or to my country, but certainly not to my fellow American. If I want to help you, it's noblesse oblige. It's because I am kind. And they feel the same way about money, right? Now, I don't want anybody misusing money. I don't want anyone cheating a charity, but I don't think most people do. I think most people on welfare need the welfare. I think most people who are on food stamps need the food stamps. I'll be the first to say that someone on not on food stamps shouldn't get their food stamps. But that's not really my priority. My priority is to make sure that hungry children are fed. My priority is making sure that rich people aren't abusing the system. There was a fascinating 60 Minutes episode last night, which I highly recommend if you haven't seen it, about the nation's opioid crisis and what's behind it. Now, it won't surprise you that a lot of what's behind the opioid crisis is pharmaceutical companies pushing high-cost drugs because they make a profit off selling these very addictive painkillers. I mean, I had an operation on my neck a few years back, and I remember the doctor gave me, like, I don't know, a vial of 15 pills. I took one of them the day of the surgery, and after that, I just took some Tylenol. I didn't need them, and plus I knew they were addictive. Heck, I probably should throw them away. Somewhere in my medicine cabinet is probably 14 pills of oxycodone or something. But they made a big profit from this. And the question is not, did some corporation make a profit? That's what they're designed to do. That's what corporations like to do. The question is why they made that profit. And what 60 Minutes pointed out last night was there was a bill put forward by Tennessee Republican Congressman Marsha Blackburn and Pennsylvania Republican Congressman Marino. And they put this bill together to make the Drug Enforcement Agency lose power to go after pharmaceutical companies for pushing these addictive, dangerous drugs on people. And they put it in this bill, and they used the revolving door of Washington to allow people who used to work for the DEA to then lobby Congress and work for the DEA. By the way, I would completely end that revolving door. I would end it. I think 10 years minimum, maybe, frankly, for me, I'm okay with a lifetime ban. You want to work in the government? Great. Don't use that work to then become a lobbyist and try to profit off what you learned in the government. Particularly, don't be part of an enforcement agency and then join the other side. It's not fair. We have non-compete clauses for far less than that. But anyway, they came, they wrote the bill. I guess people didn't notice it. They even got the DEA under Obama to reluctantly endorse the bill, and then everybody voted for it. It's one of those unanimous things that went through Congress. And as a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, I can tell you when things go through unanimously, that's when you have to be most careful. Because you think there's nothing wrong with it. And if nobody comes and no citizen notices and nobody tells us about it, boom, it goes through. It went through. President Obama signed it into law. Nobody voted against it. And that's the reason why we have the opioid crisis today. Now, what were those Republicans thinking? I mean, they represent rural districts. They represent the people who are dying at the heart of the opioid crisis. Constituents, their own constituents, are dying because of that stupid legislation by Marsha Blackburn and Congressman Marino. Marsha Blackburn, by the way, is running for senator of Tennessee. How many Tennesseans did she kill? So, yeah, my caller, Mike from San Francisco, you're right. Republicans' policies are leading to the deaths of innocent Americans. But calling them a terrorist? I don't see that as moving the ball along. Let's let them know the consequences of what they do. And maybe push them back to their Bible, which they claim to believe in. Say to them, hey, be your brother's keeper. It's kind of what we're all about. This is Mark Levine signing off.